Okay, so now we just need an intro. Something like
Friendly Sparring with Leo and Joe's.
Friendly Sparring.
The Friendliest Sparring with Leo and Joe's.
Friendly Sparring.
That's it.
All right, cool. Let's start the show.
Yep.
Welcome to the Friendly Sparring Podcast. I'm your host, Juice, and our patrons will already notice this is a solo episode. So thank you guys for putting up with our fuckery. By that, I mean scheduling, right? It's been a while. It has been a fucking while, and I'm sorry for that. I really am. Life has gotten in the way of recording this show, and it sucks. Both T-Cross and I have been pursuing stuff outside of this show that has caused us to, for me, it's caused me to miss a lot of the fights, to be honest with you. I was trying to go back, but it's hard. I did for these ones, which we'll get to, aka UFC 299. Holy shit, what a fucking awesome pay-per-view that was. But obviously T-Cross doing his comedy thing, and it's been crazy for us. As a matter of fact, like I kind of last minute was like, bro, we need to get somehow. I got to do something. Do you want to record? And he was like, I'm busy. So I was like, fuck it. I'm doing a solo episode. Like, I can't. So, life update for you guys. Moved in with my girlfriend to a new apartment, and it's been very fucking fulfilling. Starting that chapter of my life. I meant for this to be like a little more funny, to be honest with you. I was like, oh, this will be great. Fucking throwback back to the FWM days. I'll be funny as shit. Now I just want to be like super emotional just because I feel bad that we missed so long and I've been away from you guys for so long. So my apologies for that. I'm going to try to make this more regular thing to where, you know, if T-Cross and I can't link up our schedules, I'm just going to put out a solo episode. That way we have some content for you. I guess without further ado, let's dive into UFC 299 because we got a lot of fucking forum questions to get to, and I don't want this to be super long. I know some of you guys really like the long episodes, some of you don't. I love this fucking pay per view, and we were talking about it a while when it comes to as it relates to UFC 300. I almost said 200. We were talking about, you know, 299 versus 300, which is a better card. I mean, I guess we'll see when UFC 300 plays out, but as far as name value and even down to performances that deliver, right now I'm already like UFC 299 went in with a bang and came out with a bang. Like, good on paper, good on delivery. And I fucking loved it. Opening the main card, we had Piotr Jan versus Song Yadong. Oh, I meant to say this earlier. Just to close loops on something for some of the longtime listeners that keep up with every episode, we mentioned a long time ago, and we've referenced it at least once or twice after that. But I mentioned a long time ago, I saw someone on Twitter posting a video of them being able to watch the fights on Hulu, pay-per-view fights, the very next day on Hulu. And I was like, I mean, obviously they're both under the Disney umbrella, and if you have that package or whatever, it makes sense. But I'm like, okay, so my girlfriend has a Hulu package where she pays for live or something. It's way more than any streaming service should. But I don't know how much it is. That said, I was like, let's try it, let's test it out. And I went on the TV and on Hulu, and UFC 299 was available, the whole fucking main card. And I was like, yo, this is amazing. So I told T-Cross and he tested it out on his. I think he just has the bundle. Like the Disney bundle, and it fucking works. So yeah, that's going to make a huge difference in us being able to do these shows more often, especially for me being able to actually see them. Cause I know a lot of times I'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't watch the fights. Tell me about them. And it just makes not for great content, but I fucking watched all the main card and I'm so, so excited to be talking about it with you guys. I really like the Piotr Jan versus Song Yadong fight. I'm not going to cry robbery, but I have to say right off the bat, I thought Yadong might have gotten the nod. I'm not going to argue because it was close. And I don't really score fights the way the judges do. So it's not really fair for me to say it was is a wrong decision. I just was kind of expecting the other way around. But Yadong was looking a little stiff at first, not gonna lie. I had to throw that in there. Glad to see Piotr Jan back to his winning ways. They kind of alluded to it on the broadcast, but I wonder if it's just like confidence. And now that he's got a win under his belt, he'll maybe get back to his winning ways. And honestly, I know. Okay, here's my opinion. Merab deserves the next title shot. That's it. That's fucking it, dude. Would Sean O'Malley versus Corey Sandhagen be a more exciting fight? Yes. Yes, it would. And you could still make an argument for Corey to be deserving. But I really want to see a Corey Sandhagen versus Piotr Jan rematch. I don't know why. I don't know why. No, I do know why. I don't know why they won't make it. Because Corey has come so much further and Jan has regressed. I'm showing my bias. Don't like Piotr Jan. And I fucking love Corey Sandhagen. Did you guys see that ridiculous leather fucking jacket he was wearing? Not leather, leopard. It was like fuzzy leopard or some shit with the goddamn porn mustache. I can't get enough of that dude. I can't get enough. I love everything about Corey Sandhagen. And just the way he's looked lately, it makes me think that rematch is super interesting. So honestly, I feel like a great idea is to do Sean O'Malley versus Merab. None of that Ilia Topuria bullshit. We don't need that, dude. We don't need another fucking champ fight. We don't need that. We don't need a fucking champ versus champ fight. We do not need it. We do not need it. I repeat, UFC, regardless of how exciting that matchup is on paper, we do not need it. We need divisions moving again. We need Merab Dwalishwili, the Georgian fucking savage, to go up there and cuddle fuck Sean O'Malley. I wish T-Cross could be on this episode because we were texting after the fight. Because like originally, like the next day, I watched the main event. Once I saw it was on Hulu, I was like, "Oh shit!" So I watched it like very soon after the fights. And then I got up on the rest of the main card this morning. That's why I've been a little bit delayed in getting this out. But it made us go, I don't know if Merab actually steamrolls him like initially maybe everyone thought based on the stylistic matchup, because Sean O'Malley's distance management is really good. It's really good. And I always knew that it was good. He's very good at using his reach, but I feel like with Cheeto, he's a similar like lanky bantamweight. Sean O'Malley's a little bit taller, a little bit longer reach, but usually Sean has like such a significant like height and reach advantage over his opponents, and obviously he would against Merab. But with Cheeto, we only saw their first fight. It was so short because of that injury. Now, as a Cheeto fan, whenever that thing happened, I was like, it's not a fluke. Like he caused that damage, whether it was. You want to talk about the fucking peroneal nerve or whatever fuck happened, like he caused that. It goes down to me also like the Matt Hamill, John Jones thing. Like there are more than one way, there's more than one way to lose a fight, and disqualification is one of them. And there's more than one way to lose by injury. Like that's it. That's it. But that said, like I think we can now chalk that up to obviously having the benefit of hindsight. We can now chalk that up to Sean O'Malley is much, much better fighter than Cheeto is, at least in terms of striking. And Cheeto does not have the wrestling to really implement his ground game. Plus, like I said, Sean O'Malley's distance management is that good. It's that fucking good. He's a sniper. And it's really just a testament to Cheeto's toughness that he was able to stay in there because lesser fighters would have been put away sooner. And obviously, Sean is used to that. I'm not going to be like a Diaz brother fan, but like you got to think if that fight went longer, like Stockton rules, maybe Cheeto would have won just because Sean looked fucking exhausted. He is not used to going 5 rounds. Like Cheeto might have more 5 round fights than him. I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure about that. Just in terms of like not being scheduled for 5 rounds, but actually going the 5 rounds. Great fucking fight. Great fucking fight. I just somehow went from, because I think it's because of the bantamweight title picture. I went from the opener of the main card, jumped right into the main event, didn't even realize it. It's like, hey, let's just fucking skip the whole fights. So let me backtrack. I don't give a fuck. You guys know that about me. But I loved the Yan Yadong fight. Yadong made me sad. Sad to see him lose. I never like when Yadong is defeated. But Yadong emptied the clip. Yadong gave it everything he had. He just couldn't measure up. Oh, it's so lame. But great stuff from Piotr Jan. Hopefully we get that fucking Sanhagen rematch. Oh, this is what I was saying. We need O'Malley versus Merab to headline another pay-per-view. And the co-main, a five-rounder, just like the Benoit Saint-Denis versus Dustin Poirier fight was and others have been in the past. A five-round co-mainer, title eliminator, Jan versus Sanhagen. Make it happen, UFC. Sean Shelby, don't be a bitch. Sean Shelby listens to this podcast, so I'm talking directly to him. Sean Shelby, don't be a bitch. Make that fight. Both those fights. Speaking of Sean Shelby, I think they mentioned that after the next fight, the victor, when he called out Shavkat, they're like, oh, Sean Shelby, not phone isn't ringing too many people to call to fight Shavkat. Dude, let's talk about Jack Della Maddalena versus Gilbert Burns, okay? First of all, obviously, MMA Twitter loves Gilbert because he's active on there and everything, and they're like, oh, I love Gilbert. I love Gilbert, too. He's great. But let's take that out of it. He's a top welterweight. He's a top welterweight and has been for a number of years now. And if you're not ready for that next level, Gilbert Burns is going to find that out. And did he expose some holes? Yes. And listen, like, I'm not even that big of like a Jack Della Maddalena fan. I'm not like about to like, you know, I don't feel like I'm looking at this with rose-colored glasses. I'm being honest in my assessment when I say I think he showed great defense. I showed that he didn't panic on the ground. He didn't abandon his basics, right? And he was able to get out, like, when as soon as Gilbert had anything, he would go two hands on one. You know, his sub-defense was really great. And he immediately was, like, hand-fighting and things like that, where it wasn't like, with other fighters, you have a moment of almost panic. Which I feel like MVP experienced a little bit of that, but not really. In that brief grappling exchange we saw with Kevin Holland, where Kevin was almost able to capitalize. If they hadn't been against the fence, maybe he gets that choke. But the Jack Della Maddalena fight, obviously, like, Gilbert Burns was winning those first two rounds handily. There's no case to be made for Jack Della winning those other rounds, but with the benefit of hindsight that he got the finish, you can look back on those and say, he was never out of that fight. He was never in a position where I thought, okay, he's gonna lose here. You know, Gilbert has submitted, I don't want to say better fighters than Jack Della Maddalena, but maybe fighters with an even better ground game in terms of their credentials. You know, we think of Jack Della as just a striker, so there's that. I don't know. I really enjoyed the performance and I enjoyed the fucking call out. Like he's been given a bit of a slow build, but now he's had a couple fights where, okay, let's look at his record, right? As far as UFC fights go. He had obviously Ong Lusa on the Contender Series. Then he's given Pete Rodriguez. Who the fuck is that? No one knows. Literally no one. There's no way to look that up at all. No one knows him. Ramazan Emiev, same thing. No one knows him. Danny Roberts, people do know that. Hot chocolate. But is he a top welterweight? No. Pretty middling at best. Randy Brown, everyone knows and loves Randy Brown, and myself included. And he fucking submitted Randy Brown. Randy Brown, I think it's a brown belt. If not, maybe given his black belt at some point. Randy Brown got that nasty one-arm rear naked choke over the Sperminator. I forget his real name. Brazilian Cowboy. Cowboy Oliveira, Alex Oliveira. But that was a great performance. He then fights Basil Hafez. I believe that was a short notice fight. It was a close split decision. So was the Kevin Holland fight. That was his last fight. But I think we could agree Kevin Holland was a step up and Gilbert Burns was an even bigger step up. And he passed those flying colors. Now, is he ready for Shavkat, that boy good, Rachmaninoff? No. But I'm glad that he called for it. When I say ready, I mean, in terms of ready, like, yeah, it's time. It's time for you to face that upper echelon. But if I'm going to be honest, he's not a betting favorite in that fight by any means. He's a massive underdog in that fight. Maybe he thinks he can fight his ego. Like Shavkat wanted to trade with Jeff Neal for a little bit. Maybe he thinks he can catch him. Shavkat's pretty good on the feet too. It's pretty fucking good everywhere. So I don't know. Oh, I just want to see that fight. I do. I love that he had that call out. I love the call out. Like if you're advising his career, like if he didn't talk about that with his manager prior, like who knows? As his manager, I'd be like, what the fuck? Why did you say that? No. Why did I just do the Trump hands? Everyone on the broadcast, everyone on the Patreon was like, oh no, the fucking Trump hands. Yeah, no. We need to see that fight. Shavkat's probably more waiting for a title fight, but I like the Jack Della call. I believe he said, like, let's fight for a title eliminator. I like that, to be honest with you. Imagine they've been fucking pussyfooting around with booking Leon and Bilal. Imagine if they book fucking Jack Della and Shavkat before they book Leon and Bilal and the winner that has such an amazing performance that they fucking skip Bilal. That would make me so happy. Because fuck Bilal. Fuck Bilal. Yeah. So love that from Jack Della Maddalena. He really is. So I keep throwing a lot of like references to the co-main event podcast, which maybe only Catfish will be catching since Mick doesn't really listen to this show anymore. But like, yo, Flat Nose Jackie is what they call Jack Della Maddalena. That fucking nose is flat. You look at it from the profile, and I was like talking about this with my girlfriend too. She was watching some of the fights with me. She was like, "Oh, it's just his forehead is so big." I'm like, maybe, but it's both. It can be both. He has a big forehead, like in terms of like it kind of protrudes a little bit, and he's got a fucking flat nose. Well, it curves to the side like the goddamn Mike Perry nose when he fought Vicente Luque or Andre Arlovsky's nose in life. He's definitely got a fucked up fighter's nose, but the motherfucker is flat. You look at him from profile, it goes straight down. Like one of those statues, it's like a stylized fucking art style. But enough about Jack Della's goddamn nose. Let's talk about MVP versus Kevin Holland. All right, I have some fucking gloating to do probably later on in the forum. I know Catfish sent in a bajillion voicemails, as is tradition. And I sent him one this morning. I sent him the link this morning. I was like, yo, we're going to record in a little while if you want to send something in. But you already have sent several that I'm going to play. And he's like, oh, I owe you an apology about MVP. Dude. Listen, I get the sentiment that Bellator stars and the like main event fighters that they have, the champions, because they're all fucking elite, dude. I cannot think of a single fighter that has come from Bellator and got signed to the UFC that was shit. Granted, I'm only thinking about Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler, Jorge Masvidal, now MVP. You know, I honestly can't. Well, I guess technically, I was thinking about like we have Kayla Harrison coming up, but that's technically not Bellator. I only say that because PFL and Bellator now under the same umbrella. She's coming from PFL, but still, you get my point. You get my point. I do not think it's fair just to say that he's fought lesser competition, that he is a lesser fighter, and he made a great point in his interview on Ariel's show. I don't know if some of you saw that, but look at how he made Kevin Holland look. Look at how he made fucking Kevin Holland look like he didn't even belong in there or like didn't know what striking is. He had no clue where the fucking shots were coming from or any concept of footwork, which is not something I would say typically of Kevin Holland's fights. So it stands to reason that maybe the people he's fighting in Bellator or was fighting, maybe you just don't know enough about them. Like, he fought a guy named Caveman Dave Rickles, who was on Rhino's show. It's a great interview if you guys want to go check that out. But granted, Dave was like a career 55er coming up to welterweight, I think. Or he's one of those like tweeners that would go back and forth. But MVP made that guy quit. Like, there were times that I thought was going to happen to Kevin Holland where he just looked lost and frustrated and embarrassed that he was fucking made to look like an amateur in there. And like, that was happening to Dave Rickles, where he was like getting caught with coming and literally like cut him on the over the eyebrow. And he just like waved to the referee, like, I'm done. I'm fucking done. Quit in the cage. Quit. And again, this is something that you aren't necessarily going to know what that means, having not seen the rest of his fights. But Dave Rickles, the caveman, Dave Man Rickles is a fucking tough son of a bitch. So that's meaningful to me. And I always knew that about MVP. Also, just like, I like his style. I like that fucking showmanship, the showboating. I do not care if the UFC gives him a slow build and gives him all strikers. Please. I do not care. I legitimately don't. Let it be like the Harlem Globetrotters and just fight fucking contender series bums. Granted, that's not what he's interested in. He literally said, throw me in the deep end. I want your best guys. I want to prove just like all the other Bellator fighters did. And he gets a lot of props from that, for that from me, in my opinion. But yeah. I got to be honest. I did this show solo for so long. And I didn't know how I was able to keep it up. I've been doing it fucking with a partner for so long, I forgot how to just talk to myself like I used to do. So bear with me. All right, this co-main event with Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis. I love him. And I mean, I love him. He's one of my favorite fighters. I literally did an entire Shakespearean monologue when he was going to fight Khabib. I love Dustin Poirier. Stop jumping the goddamn ghillie. It's not working. I don't know why. But I love the commitment to the bit. Where Joe Rogan kept saying, and he's like, no, I'm never stopping. Like, your corner was selling your subs. Yeah, been telling me all week, I'm never stopping. And in the fucking post fight press conference, where he's like, you miss 100% of the ghillies, you don't jump. Like, stop this. Because he was having success on the feet whenever Benoit wasn't able to take him down. Like, just do that. What you're good at. Don't jump the ghillie. Don't jump the ghillie. Goddamn, I love him. That was a sweet fucking knockout. Just like the Brock I said, like a picture perfect right hook. It was literally just so fucking crisp. So we love to see that out of Dustin Poirier. And I love his post-fight speech. Talking about you have to hold your position. You know, Eddie Alvarez did it to me in 2018. Gave me an opportunity. Like, all these things he was saying, I'm just like, Yes. Fucking paying it forward. I love that. I love that energy. There's no one cooler than Dustin Poirier in the UFC. That's just it. That really is it. You can't tell me anything. You can't tell me shit. I fucking love Dustin Poirier. And I guess I already talked about the main event, but like, okay. Here's the thing too. I love Chito Vera. He's one of my favorite fighters. His story with his daughter is very fucking touching. Someone put together a compilation with this music and like, you know, cut in clips of his like interviews when he was on Tough and other things. And it made me fucking cry. It made me a mess. And I literally was like trying to tell my girlfriend how meaningful it was. And I was showing her videos of him, of the post fight interview, when he fought, Brad Pickett. I've told the story on the podcast so many times, but I think it's worth telling for maybe anyone who hasn't heard it. So if you've heard the story, I apologize. You can skip. But when Brad Pickett was, on the tail end of his career, that's sort of when I was starting to really get invested in the UFC. And he was one of my favorite fighters. He was one of my favorite fighters. Like the card that really turned me into a hardcore fan, believe it or not, this is so random, but it was Bisping versus Silva, a fight night card in London. I had just bought Fight Pass to like get, I was like, let me, you know, get into this sport. I want to get involved. I want to watch everything that they've ever done, really. Like I was just so like going fucking all in, and they're making a big push for Fight Pass, and so they had that as the headliner, and I watched all the fucking promotion for it, every single like piece of media I could get my hands on, all the interviews. I was just so goddamn invested. And so at the post fight press conference, Brad Pickett is like, I feel like I was fighting for my job. And he's like getting so emotional, and he's got his like 1 year old son there named Buddy. Like, who names their son Buddy? That's the name for a golden retriever. Like, that's so fucking cute. And he's like, you know, having his son meet Dana at the press conference. And apparently Dana said that Brad is one of his favorite fighters to watch. I just fucking love Brad Pickett. And when he fought Chito Vera, I forget who it was supposed to be, but Chito was a late replacement. And it was, excuse me. It was one of those things where they did a whole like fight week package on him, like a video package where they put together like different memories from his career and different things. And I watched it, and it fucking made me cry. And his thing, which the Reebok deal took away, he used to walk to the ring, the octagon, with a newspaper, because he was like, that was his idea of saying like, oh, I treat this as my job. This is like, you know, I'm just headed for another day at the office, reading the paper on the tube, you know. And so they made him a paper that was signed by like media members and UFC staff and things like that. And they framed it. They like duplicated it so he could have one like to frame for frame and one to walk to the octagon with. And like for the Reebok deal, they wouldn't let people do that, but they made an exception for him for his last fight. And they go out there, and Brad Pickett is dominating this guy. I mean, like, and that was my first introduction to Chito, really. And I was like, oh wow, this guy doesn't fucking belong in there with Brad. Loses young kid think he fucking is. This is Brad One Punch Pickett. This is the veteran. You know, he's fucking wearing Chito around the ring like a hat. He is just absolutely dominating. And then in between the second and third round, Cheeto's corner screams at him and gets him to come to his senses. And he's basically saying like, oh, are you... because it was in London. It was in front of Brad's like home crowd. And he's like, are you going to let this guy, are you fighting the crowd or are you fighting Brad? That's what they were saying, something like that. And it made him like come to his senses and in Chito fashion, which I should have known that like that's what he does from that first, you know, exposure. But like he was losing until he's not. He lands his fucking head kick and just puts Brad out stiff. And it was so hard to watch. I was in my car watching the fights on my phone because I was watching the card live and I had to get a haircut before a wedding that I was officiating. I was like, fuck, this is the only time I have. I'm not going to miss a second of these fights. And I watched the entire fight on my fucking phone. Let me tell you, when I had the phone, I was sitting in traffic in my electric car in LA, and that head kick landed, I screamed at the top of my lungs, no! And just started fucking bawling, dude. I couldn't help it. I was so emotional. And then Chito gets on the mic and he wins the crowd over instantly. He's like, hey, London, London, slow down, slow down. Giving some respect to Brad. He's a legend of this sport. I've been watching him fight the best in the world. When I was 17 years old, he's fighting Mighty Mouse pound for pound number one. Like he's saying all these things. And he's like, so giving respect to Brad. Like that's all he said with his post-fight interview, was just to give respect to Brad. And then Dan Hardy was on the commentators, is one of those London cards back in the day, goes over to Brad and they sort of came up together on the scene, and he knows Brad's career. And Dan Hardy has such a fucking way with words, man. Like, I don't give a fuck. I love that guy. I know he annoys some people, but I love Dan Hardy. And he goes to Brad, he puts his hand on his shoulder, and he says, "May, look around. Everyone here loves you. Doesn't matter the result, win or lose, you're still number one in their eyes," or something like that. It was just really moving. And you could tell it was affecting Brad emotionally. And he was like, "Oh, I wish I could have gone stiff. You know, I'd rather go out dead." You know, just all these things. Like, I know the ref's got a job to do. He was like, I wasn't going to be going out, you know, like that in front of my hometown. And then he said the fucking most emotional thing. He was like, "You're not fans, you're friends." And because that moment, you know, because Cheeto let Brad have that moment. I mean, it was really the broadcast, but because Cheeto used his post-fight interview to pump Brad up even more, to like cue that up, he's forever going to be one of my guys. So I'm biased, but like, Sean won every second of that fight. Cheeto only had like a modicum of success with like one knee that he landed or something like that. Otherwise, it was like a total fucking shutout from Sean O'Malley. It was complete domination. So he gets all the credit in the world. Sean O'Malley is the real deal. Granted, there's, you know, higher competition than Cheeto to prove that you're the real deal. I'm not saying, "Oh, well, you beat Cheeto, then you're the man." But like, a performance like that, that's what a champion should do. That was a championship level performance. So all credit to Sugar for that performance. And I guess that's it, dude. That's ending on a weird note, getting emotional about Cheeto and Brad Pickett for the fucking fifth millionth time on this podcast. But that's what I think. Now is the time where we can take a quick break and get into the forum. All right, we're back. Let's not waste any time because we got a lot to fucking cover in this forum. A lot of voicemails from Catfish, per usual, so I'll just dive right into him.
Hey, it's the enemy Catfish. Yo, more information has come to light around Sage Northcutt and his bitch-ass withdrawal from his fight. And it sounds like from his own coach, the California Kid, or Uriah Faber, whatever the fuck his nickname is, that Sage just decided the vibes was off and didn't want to fucking fight. Like, what in the absolute fuck is going on over there? Because apparently Uriah Faber was fine to corner him. There wasn't a problem. Only one of his coaches had a visa issue. His dad and maybe one other guy, but like, Faber alluded to that it was somehow tied to his religious beliefs that he withdrew from a fight. Like, what in the fuck? Anywho, moving on, Volkanovski, what do you think, guys? Is he going to win, or is Ilya Topuria, who is apparently incredibly fucking confident, going to win? Man, it's hard for me to vote against Volkanovski at the proper weight class, right? And I'd really like to see him win because it seems like a good guy. I'm not aware of any even bad social media takes with him. And I'm just mid on Topuria. I don't have any strong opinions on him either way. But it should be a good fight. Who you got? And wanted to finish off by saying how much I still love Drew Dober, even though he lost. He and his wife are currently on vacation with their daughter. Looks like Hawaii. It was beaches. And how adorable and wholesome is that dude? I think it was one of her stories on Instagram. I follow her as well. But, like, he's walking next to her and just, like, kisses her shoulder in the most adorable, loving thing ever. And goddammit, if Drew Dober isn't just my wholesome KO king, even if he lost and didn't get a KO, I don't give a fuck. I shall forever be a fan. I don't give a fuck, Mike Perry.
Wow, a lot of fiery energy there. Love to see it. Yeah, I love Drew Dober. Fuck Mike Perry. And Sage Northcutt is a bitch. That's it. That's all we got. That is all we got in terms of a response to that. So thank you for that, Catfish. I'm just going to go through these here. Oh, the Volkanovski. Super sad, you know, but Ilya Topuria really is that good. And that's kind of what it comes down to. I know we probably have more unpacking to do about that fight, but I'll wait to do that when T-Cross is back. So here's the next one.
Hey, yo, T-Drew, it is the enemy Catfish again. I should write down what I need to call about because I forgot to ask you. Marab Davashidi versus Henry Cejudo, Triple C. Who you got? You know, I saw that Triple C got rid of his, like, main coach in the middle of camp. That kind of shorter dude always has the funny glasses that are different colors, or maybe they're just always white. I don't know, but they stand out, right? Like, he got rid of that guy. That seems like a bad sign for Triple C. I think I got Davashidi. And I saw a post about, like, Marab is just traveling the world posting pictures with bitches. And that makes me want to buy and vote for him even more. I don't know. I feel like I was never a huge Cejudo fan, I'll be honest. Not very impressed by the guy and everything. So I don't got him. Who you got? Wow. FMP still, bitches.
Gotta love him. Gotta love him. Yeah, obviously we have the benefit of hindsight, being that I fucking get into this super late. But dude, there's no fucking way I was picking Henry Cejudo. No fucking way. No fucking way at all. Love, love, love Marab. I don't give a fuck. People say he's boring. Say he just likes to cuddle. I love Marab.
Hey, Catfish. You know, I don't remember a lot that I called about the last time before the last event, but I do remember saying that I thought Kent Gunn was due for a win or to do a thing, and somehow he managed to lose by decision. And, you know, I do some MMA bets for fun, just fucking around because I suck at doing MMA betting, but I was like, there's no fucking way if this fight goes to a decision. I give you dirt of all motherfucking people, doesn't win. And she managed to lose. So, what an absolute fuck. We now just fucking you know, I've said this before, maybe it was hyperbole in the past, and I was just MMA Catfish. Yeah. Let's just fucking cut that thing. Let's be done. This is too much.
All right, so bad connection there at the end. I always play these live on air so we can get an honest reaction to them. So I didn't know that. But yeah, cut Mackenzie Dern, I guess. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think she's got some fight left in her. And I would hate for her to go to a lesser organization, to be honest. She belongs in the UFC. She's elite. She just is all over the place with her camp. That performance against Angela Hill wasn't that long ago, and that was a fucking amazing performance. I feel like she still has that in her. I don't know. But that's just me. Let's move right along to his last voicemail, which I think is relevant to these fights from this past weekend.
Well, sorry about that, guys, but I had to spit right before I started talking. How's it going, T-Juice? Man, my intro is all fucked up. Oh, man, it's the enemy Catfish. Things are fucked up. I suppose it's all because I'm telling you to eat crow. Juice, I have to apologize. I have talked mad shit about MVP being a fucking can crusher and not a good fighter. And all of that time, you have stood behind him and said that he was good. And he absolutely fucking beat the shit out of Kevin Holland and put on a clinic. And Kevin Holland may not be a guy that we think is going to win a belt or be a fucking goat. Of anything. However, Kevin Holland is a good and solid fighter, and I definitely did not think that MVP was actually going to win because of who he has lost to. and who he has won, right? So, I would like Paul to say that this one fucking time, you were right, and I was wrong, and FMP, motherfucker!
I love this so much. My girlfriend's giving me shit for always needing to be right, but I was right. I'm not even going to rub it in that much. I just thank you for that, Catfish. Really appreciate it. And yeah, I think it's because I come from I took karate when I was little. And I love that style. And I always used to watch old like Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee movies, so I fucking love that traditional martial arts style, and he brings it. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I fucking love MVP. And the showmanship, dude, it's so important. MMA is so close to pro wrestling, and none of you guys get it because you hate pro wrestling, but it's so fucking close. And he gets that. He fucking gets that. So well done, MVP. And now let's move on to the forum. I got a couple DMs to get to. First is from the homie Combat Sports with Ryan O. He says, who are each of your prospects that have only been in the UFC for the last year or so that you enjoy watching fight the most in any division? This is a great question. It's hard to say. Well, I mean, someone that's only been in the UFC a year ago, or, you know, less than a year, MVP, technically, although it's kind of disrespectful to call him a prospect. But I'll tell you who I am excited about, and I wish I knew his name. I'm going to look it up right now. It's the Welsh gangster. Yes. Oban Elliott, the gentleman that who's Chael Sonnen is his favorite fighter, and Chael like actually came to the fights to meet him and be cage side for his performance. I fucking love that so much. I want that guy to just go all the way. I want him to be super successful. He actually made me cry fucking twice on Ariel's show. I'm not gonna lie, I love that guy. So yeah, Oban Elliott to the moon. All right, and this one is from the homie APB, who shout out sent me some sweet, sweet DMs. She sent me pictures of a bake sale she's doing where it looks so fucking good. She's always posting pictures of things she bakes, and I'm like, you have to get some of that shit to me, or I'll come there to get it. I love it. It looks so fucking good. I'm such a fat ass. I love it. But she has She has a couple of questions. The first one says, looking forward to UFC 300. Do you think stupid-ass Jamal Hill gets his belt back? And then she says, I really hope not. Fuck no! Fuck no! I do not. I think he's going to stupidly stand with Alex Pereira, and he's going to fucking get caught. He's going to fucking get caught. If Alex Pereira doesn't knock Jamal Hill out, I will cut my hair. Just kidding. That's a lie. Why would I say that? I'm not. People need to stop fucking taking me at my word. That whole I will eat my asshole thing. Actually, only Catfish, Phil the MMA Dude, and Lanta Brown are the only people who have seen that video of me eating my own asshole. I put on video. I said, if you listen to the show, you can request the video. I said on the show, DM me for the video. Catfish, Phil the MMA Dude are the only two people who like requested it. And then Lanta Brown, which old school MMA Twitter, not old school, like a couple years ago, like pre-pandemic, whatever, will know, like remember Lanta Brown. And I like, she was having a bad day, and I was just like, you want to see a really funny video of me trying to eat my own asshole? And she was like, yes. And I sent her the video. So yeah, only those people. Wow, how did I get sidetracked? Oh, because those people take me at my own word. Yeah, I'm not obviously not going to fucking cut my hair. I'm obviously not going to. UFC 300, Jamal Hill, fucking get slept. Write that down. That might be the title of this podcast. UFC 300, Jamal Hill gets slept. Write that down. He's going to fucking come after us on Twitter. I know it. All right. Question two says, I have two theories about McGregor Chandler not being the main event at 300. Either the Saudi rich guys, I love she calls them the Saudi rich guys. The Saudi rich guys want them at their event this summer, or McGregor is still pissing hot. He might have picograms in his system forever. What are yours and T-Cross thoughts? I don't know what T-Cross thinks. Because he's not here, obviously. But I think there's some theory, there's some weight to that. The Saudi Arabia theory about the fucking Sheikh Turkey Allah, whatever his name is, who is getting all those boxing fights to happen, like Ngannou and Joshua and things like that. It's definitely a strong possibility. Like, they literally were supposed to go there, I think, in March, and they like delayed their event, like, well, we really gotta do it big. Of course, because they demanded it. The Saudis demanded it. So I think they're saving McGregor for that card. But it just hasn't been finalized. There is still some weight to the pissing hot theory, not gonna lie, just because the UFC's now is their own like independent arbitrator for well, it's not an independent arbitrator. That's the whole fucking point. But they're now in charge of their own doping program. And they hired that super biased guy that trains at American Top Team. So, which I know American Top Team is not the same gym where Michael Chandler trains. It seems like Killcliffe, but it's in the same area. It's just, it's funny to me. So, yeah, love that question. Thank you, APB. Send us some goddamn baked goods. Just kidding. I love you. All right, so let's dive into the forum, shall we? This is from Funky Gouda. Shout out to Funky Gouda. This is, which fighter would make the best contestant on the challenges? I don't know if you guys have ever seen that show. I only know about it through Ariel Helwani's show because the guy that's on their New York rig is a huge fan of it. It's literally his favorite show, and he talks about it any opportunity he gets, and talks about how I think like CM Punk went on like a celebrity version of it or something. I don't know much about it, but I've seen clips of like this certain challenges they do. There's like physical stuff involved. It reminds me of honestly like because season one of The Ultimate Fighter was sort of harkening to those like early 2000s or like mid 2000s reality shows like Road Rules and all that shit. They were doing fucking shit like that with those challenges. That's that. So if you've seen season one of Tough or even season two when they still had it and it wasn't just fights, that's what the challenge is like basically. So who do I think would make a good contestant? Honestly, this is going to sound wild, but like Jorge Masvidal did a show like that in Cuba, if I'm not mistaken. It was definitely on Latin American television, but he went somewhere. I'm pretty sure Yoel Romero also went on that show. And Yoel's a fucking specimen, but he's getting up there in age. So it would be someone like that or fucking GSP, who is just like an overall athlete. Like GSP like does the fucking gymnast rings and all that shit. Oh, you know, honestly, now that I think about it, Michael Chandler, to be honest with you, because he's on his fucking Instagram, like juggling and doing all kinds of shit and handstands. And like he would do well at the show. He's a fucking maniac. Ariosa says, sticking to the reality TV theme, place three fighters on a reality dating show, Love is Blind, Love Island, and Bachelor/Bachelorette. So I text T-Cross, I was like, it's a goddamn shame you're not on the podcast today because we got this fucking amazing question. But if you want to tell me your answer, I'll read it on the podcast because he's a huge Love is Blind fan. If you guys follow him on Twitter, he was live tweeting the goddamn reunion show. He fucking loves Love is Blind. My girlfriend loves Love is Blind also. He says, top three fighters I'd love to see on Love is Blind. Bigfoot Silva, right off the bat. I couldn't even get through. I was just like, you picked the ugliest motherfucker to be on there. That's the thing about Love is Blind, dude. They're all hot. I don't like, they're all attractive people, like objectively. So maybe it's like not your specific cup of tea or like not your type. So like, oh, what's going to be my... They're not going to pick any uggos. It's reality goddamn television. But Bigfoot Silvan there would be so funny, dude. But I'm not going to lie. Maybe it's just to me and maybe because I don't understand Portuguese. I feel like him and Vanderlei, or maybe I'm confusing them in terms of this because I don't know if I've heard many Bigfoot Silva interviews, but I feel like they sound ugly. Like you close your eyes, you're like, that's not an attractive human. So like I feel like they would know. And they'd be like, oh, next. So that's number one, the Bigfoot Silva. He also is Charles Crazy Horse Bennett. Can you fucking imagine? First of all, anyone who listens to him talking and wants to date him, like any member of the opposite sex that is interested in Charles Bennett, who now goes by Charles Felony Bennett, by the way, would lose their fucking minds. Like it has lost their mind. Anyone that wants that after that, they're not all the way there. So I just feel like that if Charles Bennett can find love on that show, great, dude, great, love that for him. And he says, and Chris Cyborg for obvious reasons. Although that's like a separate sentence. I don't know if he's saying like obvious reasons for all three, but like I want to be like, what's the obvious reason? I gotta lie. I can't lie. Chris Cyborg could get it. Not my first choice, but I'd still hit. I'd still hit. Maybe I'm fucked up for that. Maybe I'm just a fucking scoundrel, but hey. Would. Absolutely would. Chris Cyborg. That's like my hear me out. Those fucking tweets is like, what's your MMA hear me out? My Chris Cyborg.
All right, this next one is from Mix the Man. I already am like, this is the fucking like Sophie's choice of Mary Fuck Kill. So we got Mary Fuck Kill, Strickland, Colby, and Chael. Right off the bat, I'm gonna marry Chael because he is a devoted husband to his wife, who always calls Miss Brittany, which is weird because it seems like he'd be big on like Mrs., but he always calls her Miss Brittany. Anyway, Mrs. Brittany, whatever, is his wife, and he's fucking like really fucking obsessed with her, devoted to her. So like, I feel like he'd be a good husband. Strickland, I feel like is more harmful than Colby actually, because Strickland actually believes the shit that he says. And I guess I have to fuck Colby, which not the worst thing. He's certainly more attractive than Strickland anyway, so I feel like that. Actually, it wasn't as hard as a choice as I thought it was going to be, but at the same time, I did not, I don't want to pick any of those. Actually, that's good. Chael's good. I like Chael. I always love Chael. Thank you, Mick. Thank you for that.
All right, and so I think no, it wasn't him. It was the homie Brian Pichet. He said recast Breaking Bad with only active or retired MMA fighters. And I sent this to T Cross because I know he loves Breaking Bad. I tried to get into it, and I have seen some of it, so I might do my own. But I think this is already a great cast. Walter White, he has his Vanderlei Silva, amazing. Jesse. Jared Gordon. And I think that's because he's an addict, which is fucked up, but hilarious. Jane, Lauren Murphy. Gus Fring, Roy McDonald, and Mike Don Fry. Chef's kiss. I would add, what's his wife's name? Isn't it Skyler? The one that everyone says is just such a massive piece of shit. I'm gonna go Walter White wife. You type that into Google, one of the suggestions is literally Walter White address. Hey, don't Google the address of a fictional character. Yeah, Skyler White. God, who is just such a Gina Carano? Yeah. Skyler White would be played by Gina Carano. Hands down. Fucking great question. And you know what? I want to give Brian Shea a massive shout out right now because I've talked about him on the podcast before as just someone whose content I really enjoy. And legitimately, when I got a follow for him from him, I was like, this is a joke. Someone from Game Informer is actually following me. This is like whatever. And I'm like, he actually listened to the podcast? What? I was like, I've been subscribing to Game Informer magazine since I was fucking like 3 years old. Like, what the fuck is this? I geeked out. And he's just a genuine good dude and really connected in the video game world. And his podcast, All Things Nintendo, until recently was like an entity of Game Informer in a way. Like, it was like part of Game Informer's content that they were putting out that he was managing. And apparently they've had some layoffs and he's had to take on other things. And the podcast can no longer be part of his Game Informer duties. So he took it out of the equation, but he still loves the podcast and wants to do it. So he's doing it solo. And I give him a ton of credit for that. So guys, please, if you are at all interested in Nintendo, because they do vaguely touch on some things outside of the video game world, but I mean, I'm sorry, not outside the video game world. In the video game world, but outside of Nintendo, but like 99% of it is just Nintendo, like Switch releases and different games and different Nintendo news pieces and things like that. So give them a fucking listen. Give him a listen. He has a lot of great guests from the MMA world. Not MMA world. Wow, I'm blanking. The Nintendo world, the video game world. He interviewed fucking goddamn Reggie Fils-Aimé, the former president of Nintendo America. He just had the editor-in-chief of Game Informer on there to talk about Unicorn Overlord, which is a real game, by the way. He's also had some really cool guests in the past, like this one lady who owns a retro game shop in Seattle. I think it's called Pink Gorilla. He also had another episode I really enjoyed with this guy who's in a band that I wish I could remember the name of, but I Googled them and I'm like, oh, they're moderately successful. I just haven't heard of them. And he's like the guy that was on the podcast, I think is like the front man or whatever, lead guitarist, lead singer or whatever. And just a really good ass dude, just a genuine cool dude. So love All Things Nintendo. Definitely go give that a listen. All right, this one is from Sandy Pants. She says, Max versus Justin, hot fight. BMF belt, yeah, okay, whatever. Now that it's looking like Dustin might fight Islam in June, do you think Justin regrets booking it? I don't know. Because I think Justin genuinely just wants to fight. And yeah, he is interested in the real title. But I think he loves that he has that BMF title and he's actually going to be the first person to defend it, whatever that means. And no, I think they're playing games with the whole Islam fighting in June thing. I think Islam is trying to publicly negotiate. He obviously doesn't handle his own tweets because he can't speak any goddamn English. That sounded racist, but it's true. He doesn't do his own tweets. It's fucking Ali. So let's stop playing games. I don't know that they're actually going to make that fight. Maybe I missed something. Maybe I didn't see anything other than the back and forth on Twitter. Maybe they are actually in talks. I don't know. Not a journalist, obviously, but I don't think Islam is going to fight Dustin in June. I think he fights the winner of this fight, which if it's Max, and it could be Max, that would be weird. I got to be honest with you. Okay, this one is from Ty Fly Guy at Ty Fly Guy 15. He says, what's one fight or two on the Hibas versus Namajunas card next weekend that should give me reason to watch outside of the main event that is? Honestly, bro, I was looking at it and I was curious why you picked that card in general, because the Tuivasa Tibura card that we have going on this weekend is not that great, but the Hibas versus Namajunas fight is awesome. Like the fight card itself. We got Edmund Shabazian versus AJ Dobson. That's going to be a great fight. Not necessarily one of the three I'm picking, but this next one definitely is. Peyton Talbot versus Cameron Simon. First of all, Peyton had a great interview on Rhino's show that I listened to, but also he's just a cool dude and he had a great debut in the UFC. So I should have actually added that to my answer to Rhino's question, because he's definitely a guy I'm excited about. But he's fighting Cameron Simon, who trains with DDPs, by that South African team. And I hope Peyton Talbot smashes that motherfucker. But Cameron Simon is really good. So So that's one. Billy Quarantillo versus Yusuf Salal. Billy Q, hello, all violence. Yusuf Salal, the Moroccan fucking machine. Love that guy. This is a great fight. This is a great fucking fight. And I think the other fight I'm really excited about is Ricardo Ramos versus Julian Arosa. That's going to be a great fight. They always come to bang those two. Other than that, it's really kind of a bunch of fucking no names. Yeah. Kamaru Usman's big older brother, Muhammad Usman, is fighting. He's literally the curtain jerker. Whatever. But yeah, dude. Fucking well worth your time, those fights. Hope that gives you something to look forward to, Ty. And this text one from Tino Ladobo. Says, do you think the UFC has no Rousey or McGregor level stars who are active fighters because they fucked up? Or is it just dumb luck and circumstances that ended up with Rousey and McGregor being crossover stars? I don't think it's luck and circumstance entirely. Obviously, there's going to be some of that in there. Like, they just sort of have that intangible stuff. Like, Rousey was like a woman's icon. She was sort of famous even before she got to the UFC for her stuff in Strikeforce and just being like a woman's icon, you know what I mean? And like the Olympics and all that stuff and the things that she would say going on these interviews. But moreover, they were in a time, Ronda and Connor, when the UFC marketing machine was really getting behind certain fighters and trying to build stars. Now they've let the UFC brand itself become the star. Because they have a strong base of like hardcore fans that will watch whatever they put out. It doesn't matter. So they're not interested in building stars anymore. It's like, will we get a crossover star? Maybe now that MVP is in the UFC and getting those eyes on him from people that don't watch other promotions and didn't know what he was, like, he's a guy that I could definitely see because he has the fucking gift of gab. He's entertaining. If you heard him talk about his walk-up that he wanted to do on Ariel's show, the guy's got fucking vision. So he's someone I could see doing that, but he's obviously in the, you know, more big in the UK market. So who knows? Great question, though. We've got a few from Dave L here. He said, if Cheeto didn't have a superhuman chin, how good would he be? Let me just take that one first. If Cheeto didn't have a superhuman chin, how good would he be? His toughness definitely is a weapon. I'm not gonna lie. I think he still has skills, but I don't know. I consider that part of the tool belt. So it's like, oh, what would Mark Hunt be if you took away his power? You know, what would Damian Maia be if you took away his rear naked choke? What would Ronda Rousey be if you took away her armbar? Like, it's a tool that he has and shouldn't be necessarily counted against him in that regard. Like I see what you're saying. I just feel like it's part of who he is. I don't know. Again, biased, but it's a fair point. He's definitely won some fights he should have lost because of his toughness. I'll give you that for sure. It says the old guard at 155 keeps turning back most of the next gen. Dustin BSD, Justin Fiziev, Hooker Turner. He says, is the next gen not ready for even the past prime veterans, or is the ceiling of next gen lower? That's an interesting question. Yeah, I think early in the UFC, they would get started like later in life, they being like the top stars and everything. So the decline was quicker because of the learning curve of the sport being new. Now the sport's been around for a significant amount of time to where like even a guy like Dustin, who's been around since like a really long time, he came up learning jiu-jitsu and MMA. And not like a one specific discipline. So he trained like jiu-jitsu and MMA with Crazy Tim Crater in Louisiana and came up that way. So I just think people are ready to count older fighters out without giving them their due, I guess. Maybe that's a wild take. It's a very good question. I just think that that's giving not enough credit to the veterans and maybe too much taken away from the young contenders, the young guns. Basically, the older guys are that good still, you know? I'll tell you what an example of that not happening, even though Renato Moicano is not exactly a young generation, but Catfish alluded to Drew Dober and Renato Moicano. Like, Renato was able to get the win there. And his third question says, will Dustin ever fight anyone bad enough for that horrible fucking guillotine to work on? It has won him zero fights so far. Sandy Pants responds, he's going to beat Islam with it, inshallah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I honestly, no, I don't think he's ever, Dustin is going to retire before landing that guillotine on anybody. But if he, I'm going to bookmark Sandy's tweet. if he beats Islam with it, I will give her all credit in the world. There we go. Fucking love that. And that, my friends, concludes the forum. No, I'm sorry. We have one from Milliken, because it was on a different thread that I was looking at. So I'm glad I double checked here. MMA by Milliken, amazing, amazing man. Got a great show. He says, GSP is the hero in your Jason Bourne story. Which MMA fighter is the villain? Has to be middleweight and above. That's tough. I like someone like Alex Pereira, like that stone cold killer. He's got a great look for it as well. Obviously, he can fight. He would tower over GSP, but GSP as the hero, obviously, is going to like employ different tactics and it'd just be like a great. It'd be not as drastic, but it would be kind of similar to fucking Bruce Lee and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I think it's like the Tower of Death or whatever, that one where he's fighting in the track suit and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar like twice his size. Just incredible stuff there. That would be hilarious, the fucking difference. But I can also see like Francis Ngannou, or who's that guy he's fighting in PFL? Hanan the Problem Fajeda maybe. Fucking unreal. Unreal, that guy, 6'9", big ass dude. All right, mates, that's it. So let me look ahead to next week, because next week's card isn't that bad, honestly. At the main event, we got Taito Iwasa and Marcin Tybura. Am I picking anyone named Marcin Tybura with a fucking haircut that bad? No. Am I always going to pick Taito Iwasa? Yes. No brainer. It's Taito Iwasa. Brian Battle versus Ong Lusa. Am I ever going to pick against Brian Battle either? Probably not, until he starts looking terrible. But I love Brian Battle. Kennedy and Zechku versus OSP. No, that's not. I'm like all doing like the left side as far as I'm looking at topology. I wonder if it's like all the red corner or the blue corner or whatever. But fucking Kennedy and Zechku is going to fucking hurt OSP. Maybe I'm biased. Maybe not. I think so. Other fight on the card below that. I'm going in reverse order than what I usually do. Christian Rodriguez versus Isaac Dolgarian. I got to go with Christian Rodriguez on this one. Isn't that the dude that did work on Raul Rosas Jr.? Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, he's that guy. Yeah, I think he can get it done here. I like that guy a lot. Penny Kianzad versus Macy Chasson. It's always Team Macy in this house, baby. That's it. That's actually the first time I've picked on the opposite side. And then GM3 versus Brian Barberena. Tough one, but I got to go GM3. I just love that dude. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck how many times he looks bad and loses. I feel like he's always still in it with all those crazy subs he can pull out from nowhere. So I fucking love Jim 3. I love that he plays the sax. I love that he was a former teacher, like all these things. Just a big fan of Gerald Meerschaert in general. And that's it, babies. Sorry we didn't have a longer podcast for you, but them's the breaks. And oh, I almost forget to say this. No, I actually have to shout out the patrons. Wow. I was getting ready to do a fucking cutoff ending there. So sorry about that. But here we go. Shout out to APB, Sandy Pants, Alex from Jersey, T Cross, Dave L, Anonymous, David Everett, Wholesome MMA, David S, Harry Andrew, Zim, and Shane Terra. Love, love, love these people. They really are the best people I know. And that's it. You too can become a patron for just $1 a month. How about that? Patreon.com/friendlysparring. Look into it.